Welcome to the Food Matters Live podcast, where we showcase the innovations, the big ideas, and the visionaries in the food industry. We dig deep, we look to the future and the past, and we question everything we think we know about food. I'm Anthony Zara, and this episode was recorded live at the Food Matters Live event held in Dublin in November 2025. In this episode, our panel of culinary innovators reveal which flavour trends are defining the 2020s and which unexpected ingredients will reshape menus by 2030.
Our next session brings together some of the most creative minds in the kitchen, leading chefs and culinary innovators who are redefining how we think about taste, how we think about the ingredients we use, and of course, how we incorporate those global flavour trends. So we'll be exploring really bold tastes, all the emerging ingredients that are coming up on menus, and those cultural influences inspiring today's menus, and what it actually means for the future of product development, that big burning question we all have. So please join me in welcoming our fantastic panel. So we have Derek Conlon, Group Culinary Innovation Manager at Keepak; Stephen Humphreys, Head of Hospitality Culinary at Vacheron; we have Rory Boyce, who's the Executive Chef, Sports and Entertainment at Aramark; we have Audrey Crone, the Executive Chef at Unilever; and we have Michael Kilkee, Head of Culinary at Enough. Welcome, guys. Come on up. So you're all really, really welcome, and thank you so much. As I said, this is the last slot of the day, and we have saved the best for last, so absolutely no pressure on any of you. You might start, Derek, I'll maybe go from the end. Just tell us a little bit about your organisation, what you do, and sort of your role and how it plays into the business.
Yeah, of course. My name is Derek Conlon. I'm with Keepak. Keepak are a large Irish agri-foods business. You know some of our brands like Big Al's and Rustlers and the food side. And then if you've ever bought red meat in Ireland, pretty much you've had our product. My role, I've been a chef for 20 years, but in the last 18 months, I've kind of delved more into strategic innovation and trying to future-proof our business and looking at where Keepak can develop the business, which much more of a health and sustainability focus.
Brilliant. Thanks, Derek. Rory, welcome. Good to see you again.
Thank you. My name is Rory Boyce. I'm an executive chef for Aramark Sports and Entertainment here in Ireland. Welcome to my home. I'm based here most of the time. I hope your lunch
is
okay.
Thank you for lunch.
Aramark is an integrated facilities company covering food and facilities property management. But a significant part of that food is sports and entertainment. This is our main hub. We also have the club lounges in the Three Arena. We look after Punchdown Festival racing. We look after the Irish Open golf every year, Thomond Park Stadium in Limerick, amongst other things. And that's just my little world.
Four corners, basically.
Pretty much, yeah. It's pretty exciting. No 2 days are the same. We've had a massive year this year, culminating in the NFL here.
Of course, yeah.
At Croke Park, and probably the hardest day I've ever worked in my life.
Still quite haven't recovered from it. Audrey, good to see you again.
Yeah, you too. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me. I'm Audrey Cron. I'm the executive chef for Unilever Food Solutions Ireland. Food Solutions is the food service side of the Unilever business. I do a little bit with retail as well, cascades and recipe development, reformulation and things like that. I'm responsible for all things food and food service in Ireland. I work with all channels, whether it's recipe development, helping chefs with the challenges they face. I've been in every aspect of food service over the years for many, many years. Whether it's reformulation of our own products and going to our innovation centre in the Hive in Bagen in the Netherlands. As Rory said, the best thing about being a chef is no 2 days are the same, and every day is a school day. So we're all about learning, all about, you know, moving forward. What's the next trend as chefs? I see us as translators, how we take those, you know, fads or trends and create something that's affordable and exciting for customers, whether retail or food service.
Brilliant, brilliant. Thank you, Audrey. Michael, welcome.
Yeah, so I'm Michael Kilkee. I'm the head of culinary at Enough. I feel like I might be the odd one out here. I'm the only non-Irish person, but I've not come too far. I've come from Glasgow. Yes, so Enough, we're a mycoprotein manufacturer. So we make mycoprotein at scale and we sell it to customers who then go on to further process it into meat analogues, chicken analogues, fish, dairy. My role within the business is to support and accelerate our customers' development, whether they're going on to make a product for a McDonald's or for a retailer, Albert Heijn in the Netherlands, Tesco in the UK. So my role is to try and accelerate their learning of mycoprotein, because although it's been around a long time, it's quite new to a lot of people. You know, you'll probably all be familiar with corn, which has been about a long time, but to the open market, mycoprotein hasn't really been available. So we try and support our customers in their journey to getting products onto shelves, into restaurants, etc.
Brilliant. So not very busy at all, are you?
No, a lot of travel.
Stephen, welcome back. Good to see you again.
Thank you for having me. So my name's Stephen Humphreys. I'm head of hospitality for a company called Vacheron, which is a high-end contract caterer in London. We've got 90 sites across the city, and I oversee all the hospitality side of it. So there's chef development, menu planning, just trips out, suppliers, visits, as well as high-end events, and all things hospitality, and then dip into the retail side as well.
Is that a new development in retail, or
just a natural development of me doing more than everyone else, basically?
Excellent. Well, it's always good to spread across a few different channels, as we know. So we talked about in earlier panels the sort of future and thinking about 5 years time and what the, you know, world's going to look like. But just to start maybe with this year, 2025, what's the big kind of trend, the big flavour trend or product trend that you've seen? And Derek, I might start again with yourself at the end, and then I'll mix it up.
There may be a few eye rolls and groans, but I think when I explain it, I think Korean has been what's defined 2025. Now, from a chef and a development chef's perspective, I got my first Korean food brief in 2014. But there's a certain level of metrics and markers you need to hit before it hits prevalence and relativity across all your markets. And once it gets into ubiquity, then you can finally say, I think that a trend has been defined. And I think anyone with young kids knows all the words to Golden by K-pop Demon Hunters. And once it gets to that level of ubiquity, getting something like gochujang and tteokbokki into the general consensus is quite easy.
Very good. And out of interest, did you look back on your brief of 2014 and how different was it?
It was a match for a bulgogi sauce for Costco. And that was matching a Korean chef's recipe. So just thinking how far we've come in those 11 years.
Okay. And what do you think is driving that sort of popularity of Korean? I know you did mention, but like what else is driving that we're kind of craving a bit of Korean now?
It's a particular Asian food that melds with Western palates quite easily. It has the largest US Army base outside of America. So there's a lot of Western palates to please at the same time. It takes dairy, it takes cheese, which again, you don't often see in a lot of different Asian cuisines.
Yeah.
So they're big on crunchy, you're big on umami, they're big on salty. It just hits all the dopamine dining factors that we want to have.
Very good. Brilliant. Rory, outside of NLF, what was the biggest sort of trend that you felt this year?
Well, at the NFL, I wouldn't have said there was much trendiness about it or anything really creative. The Americans are very good at producing food and events at a very high level, not necessarily when it comes to kind of innovation or quality, dare I say. They're very good at high speed and convenience. So I didn't really take much out of that. But one of the things that we have been asked quite a lot about this year, there's an awful lot of interest in various different smokinesses and spices and stuff like that. But that's kind of a thing that always happens. But one trend that I did notice that we were asked for quite a bit this year was, funnily enough, nothing futuristic. It was more nostalgia foods. Can we start to do quite a few schoolyard desserts and stuff like that at most unusual kind of conferences with these grey-suited businessmen and stuff like that? Next thing they're eating a rhubarb crumble, and it brought a smile to everybody's face. I don't know if it's a trend as such, but it's something that we're repeatedly asked for this year.
Yeah, okay. Second time it's come up today, where we actually came up earlier in terms of nostalgia within the dessert category in retail as well. So there's definitely something going on there.
There is. And funny enough, I don't know, with the age group, that we're seeing that a lot from, you know, a lot of these probably wouldn't remember the original anyway. Mm-hmm. So, but I don't know whether it's a fight back against, you know, whatever's happened in the last few years. There's been an awful lot of trauma and upset between pandemics, global economics, global warfare, or not global warfare, but certainly war in Europe and stuff like that. So there's a theory that it might be a rush for comfort, mm-hmm. you know, and that's now, we're seeing quite a lot of that being requested on our menus from, like I said, even the most unusual sources, you know.
Very good. Audrey, what special ingredient have you been playing around with this year?
Ingredients specifically, from a Unilever perspective, it doesn't tie in, but it does to a degree, is when we think about the pistachio, the white chocolate, everything green. Last year was about brat summer. Do you know, it was all a, you know, a TikTok trends and all of that, which green ties in perfectly with Knorr. From an ingredient perspective, Asia is huge, but the kind of food trend that I see is the biggest is kind of borderless cuisine. And that's one from our future menus trends report, which is kind of about the migratory elements where people are, you know, we're all more widely travelled, and we want to relive that summer holiday, or a second generation of chefs where, you know, they may be living here in Ireland, but they're family are from another country or whatever, and taking it's a bit more thoughtful than fusion and the old fusion. It's more bringing a thoughtful ingredients together, so taking those traditions, techniques and ingredients and bringing them together. Itala Easy is kind of one of I if I think about it, so if you take Italian and you take like an arancini, giving it an Asian twist on it, you know, it's a melding pot. No rules, kind of cooking is the big one for me.
So anything goes.
Anything goes. And that's what's great about being a chef, is the fun element of it.
Of course, of course. Michael, what's going on in your world?
So not specifically with me, but I think the big one I've noticed has been the extension of the sweet and spicy, like the hot honey.
Yes.
I think the hot honey thing, they were the kind of
it's
poster.
Busy.
I think it's the worst name ever. It's Swicy.
Swicy.
You get Swicy and Swalty or whatever. But I think, you know, it started as a pizza drizzle, hot honey. But I think actually now, if you look at any kind of skewer, any kind of category, you know, there's hot honey, espresso martinis, you know, there's sriracha and honey crisp. It's really kind of, you know, pairing the sort of pineapple with habanero. It's really sort of, and I think it brings a tolerance to chili heat for people if you see it coupled with something sweet, with it from a cuisine perhaps that you recognise, and makes it a bit more accessible. So it's maybe a lot of people's first kind of inroad into think, you know, a bit of heat and a bit of chili, where they previously have thought a chili's a chili and it's going to burn my mouth. But actually, so I think probably the extension of the kind of sweet and spicy thing has been the thing that I've noticed, and how many different categories and skews that it's appeared in.
Yeah, great example. Great example. Stephen?
Yeah, so mine's slightly different approach on the, I agree with the Korean and the nostalgic desserts, definitely. But we've been sort of tasked a lot this year with how do we have these fine dining experiences, but then incorporate your gut health.
A functional
dining
experience.
Yeah, exactly. And so mushrooms have been a big part of that. I know mushrooms have been popular for years, but now...
Well, according to David, I don't know if he's still here. It's next year's trend.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah, just I think now, because now the evolution of technology, the evolution of everyone's knowledge, now the benefits we see from them are making them super popular, and they're a great ingredient to work with. But then there's all the fermented stuff as well. Again, it's all done with gut health route.
Absolutely.
Fermentations as pickles.
Yeah. Totally agree with all of that. And actually, it leads in quite nicely to my next question, which is, what are the emerging ingredients? So the ones we've mentioned are the sort of hot ones and we're all quite familiar with of this year. But what do we see sort of moving into the next 5 years? And, you know, as a producer, what ingredient do we need to be sort of maybe getting in and playing around with? And I might go this way.
Yeah, so I would say Koji is going to be a massive one.
Taking Audrey's answer. Better have another answer there, Audrey.
Yeah, so... Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about that and how are you playing with this? How are you utilising it and bringing it into menus?
So it's like a friendly mould, basically. It's grown on grains and it adds massive flavour to all your dishes, but then it's got all the goodness that your body needs as well. So I work with Silo quite closely, Doug McMahon.
Sadly to see it close.
Yeah, it's closing, sadly, but one door closes, another
opens. Absolutely, yeah.
And on the other side of that is because he's got a Koji farm, basically, in Hackney.
Oh, very good. So Silo was one of the first no-waste restaurants in London. I don't know if anybody had ever managed to get there to it.
Yeah, no-waste, no-bin restaurant.
Brilliant. So, yeah, so, and again, very innovative. So what he touches, I'm sure, will have a future in it as well.
Yeah, and I believe he's now lots of the Coatis farm, this little farm in the back end of Hackney Wick. And it's, I believe it's the biggest Koji producer in Europe now.
Fantastic. So, okay, so Koji's on your list, Michael.
I would go along those lines. I would say fermented proteins, I think. Okay. And obviously producing microprotein, I'd be silly not to say that. But I think actually, whether it's precision fermentation, liquid state, solid state, I think fermentation is the closest you're going to get to the animal without, in terms of taste and texture, whether it's dairy or meat replication. I think fermentation is really, you know, not just with, you know, as you say, with kimchi and things, but the actual fermented proteins are really, I think you'll see them in a real ascendance in the next coming years.
Okay, and what kind of, what gives you some examples of products that you're seeing sort of leading the way on that?
So we're working with customers, most of our customers are mainland Europe, and actually just watching the previous panel, hybrid is a really big thing. I think the UK had a bit of an attempt at hybrid, if you maybe went into Tesco 3 or 4 years ago and you seen a packet of mince that had some chopped carrots and onions through it, and that was their interpretation of hybrid. But actually what the lady from Meatless was talking about, and we actually work with Meatless, is, you know, it's a really good way of extending meat. So we have a lot of customers who are doing, you know, what can we add? How much of an alternative protein can we add to, say, beef mince before, you know, without affecting the integrity of the product, you know? So can we go to 10%, 20%, 30%? But then obviously you get a point where the colour changes, the amount of fat in it changes, so your mouthfeel changes, your protein content, so it might not bind into a burger. So it's really about finding that sweet spot. So we're working with a lot of customers who are, you know, focusing on that. I think the biggest challenge for it is how do you market it? And we always, when we sit with retailers and we sit with people and they bring the marketing people in, they can't quite, you know, at this moment get their head round, well, what do we tell the consumers that they're eating here? Is it some kind of science experiment? Is it? So it'll be a slow changing kind of thing. And it's a bit the same with fermented products like microprotein. You know, they want to know, well, what are we selling? You know, it's a strain of fungi. So what are we selling? Do we call it mushroom food? Do we call it? So I think for me, it'll be microprotein, other fermented proteins, but it's about changing the consumer's mindset, I think, for these things.
I guess the consumer understanding the benefit of it, as opposed to you're taking the high value meat away and you're giving me a cheaper product, actually the benefit and why I should be consuming that. And again, been in that world of messaging and marketing for a long time, it's not an easy one to perfect.
And the your go-to is you always want to say, well, there's a high street bakery that sells a sausage roll that's already a hybrid product. Yes. So it's, the meat content's not huge and it's got
meat extenders
in it. So it's not a brand new thing. It's just about...
Yes, you know. But also really important that transparency, you're bringing the customer on the journey. You're absolutely not trying, because if you lose them, you know, and with distrust, then can damage your brand. Audrey, future, what are you working on or exploring?
I think Stephen hit the nail on the head there. Koji, great meaty flavour, and functional mushrooms. What David's doing is fantastic. I use his gummies myself because I don't get enough of the nutrition in. But when you talk about, you know, the gut health and functional nutrition, there's simple things like adding lentils from the Future 50 Foods, better for you, better for the planet, into your bolognese. But One of the key things I really think that's shaping the future of food is how you use your byproducts, how you make it better. And at Food on the Edge last year, being chef-led, and chefs are always trying to be creative and reduce waste and all of that sort of stuff. Chef there, Matt Orlando, he's been at it every year, and he has a restaurant in Copenhagen. Well, his new one just opened, but he has a lab on the side. And he stood in front of a screen with the 7-Eleven logo behind him. And all he's talked about over the years, he said, whoever thought you'd see me with a 7-Eleven on the screen behind me. He had developed from a byproduct using kojis and fermentations and whatever it is he does, works his magic. And he developed cookies for 7-Eleven that were called Light and Dark, which were from chocolate. They replace the chocolate because cocoa has got so expensive and all the environmental stuff and all of that. But he calls it thick, as in this isn't chocolate. And he gave us a taste of this isn't chocolate in the cookies. And you wouldn't have believed that it wasn't chocolate, but it was from a byproduct of, and he worked with 7-Eleven. So the key thing is, it was said earlier, getting chefs involved early, getting that creative mind to think outside the box. But how you use your byproducts to create something that is tasty is the way to go, definitely. That's the future.
Brilliant. Thanks, Audrey. Rory?
Well, I'm sorry I missed David's presentation, and I know there's an awful lot of talk about mushroom, but, you know, mushrooms, for me, absolutely, for the future, alongside Michael's thoughts, just use a little bit differently, and maybe something that I need to talk to Derek about. We're very conscious here of our usage of red meat, very high for the stadium we're in, and so we're looking at supplementing a percentage, and like Michael said, it needs to be determined. It could be 10, could be 20, could possibly even get up to 30%. Replacing that red meat by mushroom. So like the mushroom flavour, the umami, it lends itself really well to beef anyway. So that's one of the things that we are certainly looking at here into the future. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's out there. It's been out quite a while. I think JP McMahon has been fantastic spearheading. Like, he's been a champion for seaweed. It's totally underutilized, massively. It's got so many benefits. We use quite a lot here. We've taken gelatin out of all our menus. We've replaced it as a setting agent, which allows us to create all of our vegan-friendly desserts without cream. So I think that's one that will probably be accelerated a little bit more over the next couple of years. It's cheap and it's abundant everywhere.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. A natural resource. Brilliant. Derek?
I'm probably going to go a bit left field to the rest of the panel. I think things like weight management boosters, like collagen peptides.
Very good. Yeah.
So I think we need to be super cognizant of, yes, the users who are actively on GLP-1s and other GLP-1 mimickers, but they will come off that, and microdosing might not be the route that they want to go. So weight management outside of education needs to be maintained, and collagen peptides will help prevent that blood glucose spike, so you mightn't have that instant crash which you need to then fulfill again with junk food eating, or like, because it was mentioned earlier in one of the talks, everything they craved while they were off it, they went straight back to having it when they came,
see the spike up and down.
Exactly.
Of course.
So anything that you can get into your foods that will help create natural satiety, and collagen peptides is something that will help with that.
Very good. And that sounds slightly different to red meat, but how are you integrating some of that thinking?
If you think something like bovine collagen is very prevalent at the moment. And this is very early doors stuff, but it's just something that I do believe that, well, at Food and Matters Live in Rotterdam, we were talking to a company called Rousselot, and they were developing a product called Nextida, which is a natural collagen peptide, which is designed to take an hour before you eat, and it helps lower that blood glucose spike, so you don't feel the guilt, you don't feel the hunger again, so you just maintain satiety.
Excellent. And I guess leads on quite nicely then to my next question, because everything comes back to tasting really good. So even if you are on a GLP-1 injection or tablet, we talked earlier about it, still needs to taste really good. But the other factors, and particularly this is where I think the chef really comes into play, is around the texture and the aroma and making sure that all of those deliverables really happen. How are you sort of incorporating that into everything that you're doing at the early stages of development? And Stephen, you did mention experience in the restaurant. So how does that play into that?
As in, sorry, can you repeat it?
So just, and I can get Michael to answer it first if you want to gather your thoughts together. So just from the other attributes around food, so the aroma and the texture, what are the things that are really important in terms of the early development of products? So it's not just leaning into taste, you're leaning into those other attributes. And I always feel a chef contributes hugely to that. So is there anything in particular that you're doing in your business to lean into that?
I think at the moment in particular with social media, visual is very, very important. I think
visual.
I think the visual element of, you know, whatever you're doing, ultimately taste will always be the winner. We always look at things like, particularly in the plant-based space, what do people want? You know, and different people tell you it's different orders, it's price, parity, it's taste. But ultimately, taste always comes first. But I think visually something has to look really pleasing. And I think that's where a chef and somebody in the culinary world can really put their slant onto things.
But if you're thinking of, just take the burger, I don't mean to go back to kind of red meat all the time, but just take the burger as an example and maybe experimenting with precision fermentation and, you know, how do you get, so the taste we talked about definitely comes true, as particularly if you're, you know, exploring things like mushrooms, but how do you get the texture to feel like it should?
But I think that, again, and I'm so kind of going towards plant-based, but when you look, the biggest challenge is, you know, nearly every plant-based burger in the market will use something called methyl cellulose because it's the closest bite that you can get to a real meat burger. Mm-hmm. But on the same token, every retailer you walk into, every food manufacturer says, if we take an ingredient in, do we have to use methyl cellulose with it? So I think, you know, because they really want to get away from it, but they find it very difficult to get away from it. So I think certainly with plant-based, you have to replace all these elements that you don't get with a lot of alternative proteins. You've got to bring your fat content in for mouthfeel. You've got to bring something to give it that bounce. You know, I think probably the days of the kind of bleeding burger for plant-based have passed now. That was the first thing everyone wanted. But I think people have came to realise that not every vegan or not everyone that eats plant-based wants their plant-based burger to squirt out what looks like blood in it. So I think things are changing, but I think, I think particularly we are a bit more challenged in terms of plant-based because we have to replace, all the elements that you don't get, that you get with the animal, but that you don't get with us. I think if that answers the question.
Brilliant. Audrey?
I think we got to remember that it's food.
Yeah.
You got to treat it the way you would food. So it's those techniques, whether it's plant-based or whatever, you know, it's the grilling, the smoking, the things that add depth, that add flavour, that add texture. That's what people want. TikTok is great and all of that sort of stuff. And it has to be Instagrammable because it has to look good. So it has to look like what it is. If you take, say, for example, if you're, and let's go back to the functional mushrooms, because that is the trend down the line. Lion's mane, press it, treat it like a steak. If you want it to be like a steak, treat it like a steak. Press it, baste it, you know, fry it. Do all the stages and different things that you would do because it is food. It's not ultra processed. People don't want that ultra processed. They want to know what they're eating is natural. They want the story behind it, you know, and not the false narrative story that it's Keens from a piece of cheese and actually it's not. You know, they want the reality, the truth behind it. They want clean label. We heard about that earlier. It is food, and that's what we have to remember. Whatever it is you're developing, it has to be real food.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I fully agree with Audrey. I'm not a huge fan or proponent of trying to make something that it's actually not. I prefer a dish to stand on its own two feet and its own merit. I've spoken to many people that have chosen a plant-based diet and they've said to me in the past that they don't want to have something that has the texture and the flavour of beef. They've chosen a plant-based diet for a reason. I do get it. I get it. There's a huge market out there. But I think, you know, in the past, we used to have a set of menus here and we'd have our list of dishes and then we'd have a separate page with all vegetarian and vegan alternatives. That's gone. Now they're very much a central and integrated part of any menu because they stand on their own merit. You know, it's interesting, Derek talking about the collagen peptides, because I think that's something that will come down the line in the next few years. The taste peptides, you know, it's an amino acid based thing, which should really be replacing MSG over the next few years. And I think, you know, something like that. So, like Audrey talking about, you know, treating a mushroom. If you want to have a mushroom steak, treat it like a steak. That's absolutely correct. Grill it. You know, introducing peptides into something like that would just accelerate that last smokiness, that grilled flavor from you or from the mushroom itself, you know. I'm not that involved in product development. We put food on plates instead. So, but we do a lot of internal trials and we have quite a bit of fun with it, but I wouldn't, I'm not a big fan of trying to make something that it isn't, you know.
Yeah, I think Rory's hit the nail on the head. I think we're in very dangerous waters at the moment in the plant-based food world because the word vegan became dirty and synonymous with rejection very, very quickly. And I worry with the amount of very quick innovation and sometimes not very well thought out in plant-based that we're running that risk very quickly. There's a multitude of cuisines and cultures that do plant-based, but it's just food. And I think that we've come so far away from just having food be food. But we have to say, oh no, that's plant-based, that's dairy-free, that's lactose-free. Just
so we've segmented it wrong.
It's just food. You know what I mean? Some food is plant-based, some is ovo-lactarian, and some isn't.
Yeah, I totally agree. One of the things that came up today was around sort of collaboration, and we see Derek's great example of the Alternative Protein Innovation Centre been a collaboration across industries, across countries. What's going on within your own businesses, sort of collaborating either cross-functionally or with businesses externally to sort of bring ideas to life maybe quicker or better? What's happening? And maybe I'll start with yourself, Audrey.
Look, I'm a chef. Food service is restaurants, it's contract catering, it's all of that sort of thing. For collaboration and things, we work with chef ambassadors.
Very good.
So people that chefs that people recognize, look up to, know, like there's different chefs for different channels. So Cathedrals, schools, we work with Tom Carriage. We've, you know, worked with Gaz Smith here and Chad Byrne here, you know, different chefs that trust our products and trust our brand and they cook with ingredients and show chefs how to use them better, how to get creative with them, how to just do some innovation and some different dishes. So one of the things I find really great is chef ambassadors.
Rory, what's going on for yourself?
I just had a chat with Rory Dooley from BSL here earlier on. I'm looking at heading down to Tullamore with the wider crew in February, I think it is. You know, it's very interesting, his story, using spent grains from local distilleries, mm-hmm, and how they incorporate those into protein bars, bites, all that kind of stuff. We actually have them on our meetings and events menus here in Croke Park. But as a wider part of the Aramark business, you know, we'll be looking to, I was talking to Caroline Donovan earlier on, our dietitian, and introducing them into our healthcare division, possibly down to players in Munster Rugby. It's an Irish company. They're only in Tullamore, so it ticks an awful lot of boxes for us. We're going to work closely with Rory over the next couple of years to develop specific products for various different branches of the business. Yeah.
Great example. So sort of looking for the early startups and seeing what's going on from an innovation perspective. And then I guess as a bigger organization, how you can work together then to collaborate on something really special. Yeah. Great example.
Something that's like, I can't really speak for the marketing team, but I know it's something that they are actively investigating I think 2025, we probably saw more collaborations than ever before, like none so probably dominant as the KFC gravy and Hackney gelato. I mean, who would have thought about that 5 years ago, gravy flavored ice cream. But I think it's integral that to progress, there needs to be a level of healthy compromise between retailers and developers. Like a lot of chefs, I could probably be quite guilty of being idealistic, and I would love everyone to go back and eat whole foods and eat the way our grandparents did, eat more offal, eat the fifth quarter. But the realistic is we live fast, convenient lifestyles. So finding that happy compromise between a retailer who might always want extra shelf life, and us adding a little more shelf life, but putting the brakes on at a certain point so as not to step on the quality of the product.
And dare I ask, are you utilising things like AI and other sort of maybe non-human?
Absolutely. I was a bit of a late adopter of AI, but I do think it's absolutely massive. I think the amount of data that's out there from companies like Lumina, Mintel and Kantar, you could have an executive reading that for weeks and weeks and weeks, and you're still only getting one person's interpretation of that data. And I think that's where AI can really take a step up and stick to true objectivity, which is for me the holy grail in product development.
Yeah, absolutely. Stephen, what sort of collaborations sort of internally or externally are going on within Vacheron?
So we do a lot of chef development. So the chef, like similar to what Audrey said, the chef ambassadors. So what we're trying to do over the next year is really nail down to when these collaborations are relevant, whether it's sort of Black History Month, is it National Women's Day, things like that. And then prior to that, we are putting in the work to put the inspiration in. So this year we've done a Coco, which is the first West African Michelin-style restaurant in London. And they'd never done a masterclass before. And then we took 12 chefs there, had the restaurant to ourselves. And then we got like one-on-one tuition on West African ingredients and food, and find that really inspires our chefs and keeps us ahead of the curve, really, or makes us being the ones creating the curve.
Absolutely.
As they're the only chefs in the world who've had a one Michelin star in London experience.
What a treat. God, to be part of that team.
Yeah, then on the other end, so back to Silo, we've been over the last year developing a soy sauce, a British made soy sauce out of, but there's no soy, so because you can't grow soy in the UK, so they're using split peas, and we've been helping them develop it, tasting and giving them all the tools to get it to market. Obviously we're going to be the pilot ones, but not so we can keep the product to ourselves, but just because it's an amazing product. It's amazing.
You mentioned it last year.
Yeah.
It was in very early development. So it's great to see 12 months on that still latter, progressing.
Yeah, so at latter stages, it's fed final tastings. They're working on packaging, how they want to do the packaging and things now. So that one's nearly over the line. And then we've also now got we're working with a potter, Mark, and he's taken him 8 years to develop how to turn glass bottles like this into plates that we can eat off. So he 8 years ago he had this crazy idea and started playing with it, and then he worked out how to do lampshades and things like this, but to actually eat off a plate is taking him this time. And now what we've got to now is that we're just piloting with one of our sites that they give him all their glass bottles, so all their events and things save their glass bottles up to him. He breaks them down, then they buy the plates back off him in a whole closed loop.
Fantastic.
Innovation. And what's the point of it? Well, the point is that to burn down a glass bottle, it's 1,800 degrees. If he breaks it down to make these plates, it's 900 degrees. So cuts that carbon footprint in half. Straight away.
It's a great example, and actually a non-food example.
Relevant
in that.
Yeah, and I think that's more like the storytelling and people knowing what things are, where they're coming from. It's going more than just the plate. It's the plate itself as well now.
Right. Brilliant. Right. Love it. Michael, collaboration in your business?
Yeah, so we've very much encouraged and take the approach of going right back to the consumer. So we, along with our partners and customers and potential customers and internally, we will look at doing things like last week we were in Turin, and we took over a food truck. So, and one is a, it's a life cycle analysis company we work with. So we fed their whole building, 130 people for lunch with different products. We worked with different partners to produce things and get their feedback. You know, we'll do pop-up two nights in a pop-up restaurant. We've just finished a consumer testing in Wageningen, just near where you guys are. So,
were you collaborating on something?
No, so we done it. It was actually a hybrid mince. We had 120 people tasting, blind tasting five or six different hybrid mince. So we focus a lot on the consumer and getting, because I think when you really get into them, you're at an early enough stage where you can take the feedback and from the ground, and you know, you're at a stage where you can tweak things and you can amend things, and it gives you, you know, just where we are. It's something we sort of actively encourage, and we find that, and also it gives you some really good kind of social media moments and things, you know, these kind of things, particularly when you're an emerging brand and you want to have these things to celebrate as well. And, you know, we're probably, you know, we're just coming out of being a startup, but we're other than Marlowe and Corn, we're probably the largest microprotein producer there is, but we have to celebrate things. We have to get good news out there, and we're very, very big in collaboration. We're a small team, so we kind of thrive.
And also, it's great because we were talking earlier about, you can just kind of get lost in the data, or you can get lost in the science, or you can get lost in the, and you really do need that consumer
something tangible that you can
to ensure that the consumer is seeing it and that they're, you know, tasting it, and the likability of it and all of that can I suppose be tested in those little pilot sessions that you're doing.
And
people, how lucky is that office as well, like to have lunch served to them? Obviously not for free, they've got to give their feedback, but
people will be truthful with you, that's the thing as well, so you know, you're getting real-time feedback.
Very good Have I covered everybody on that question now? Great, brilliant. So look, we've got a couple of minutes for questions, so have them ready, and we have time for it, and I promise you I'll still get you out of time. But I suppose the last kind of closing reflective question then is just, if you could predict one unexpected flavour or ingredient that will take off by 2030, so really looking forward, what would it be?
For me, I think MSG will be destigmatized.
Okay.
I think for me, I don't know about any other developers in the room, but the bane of my life has been trying to get consumers to understand umami. We know they love it. We know they crave it. It makes them want more. But whenever you say the word umami, you can just see the blank look that goes across their eyes. Yet MSG seems to land with them. Perceived currently as a nasty, but I think creators on YouTube like Fallow, even Uncle Roger, Joshua Wiseman are big proponents of using MSG. The rise of Asian cuisines and third culture cuisines as well, where you're blending that new knowledge against classical techniques. I think it's like, I mean, I've had a bag in my spice press, I'm here just refreshing from the Asian market, but I think it's not far from being available on the shelf in Tesco. I mean, unless John is still here and he'll tell me no.
Brilliant. Great prediction. Thank you, Derek. Rory, what's on your prediction list for 2030?
Like Derek, I think you know, anytime you're always looking for something in the future, you always look east. I think they're fantastic innovators, the Japanese, Singapore, obviously. I think that you'll see an acceleration in the production of cultured meats. I think the Japanese and the Singaporeans are working on that at the moment, and I think that'll probably become a little bit more mainstream into the future when you take into account, you know, we're talking about the bad news of red meats and methane gases and this transport, production, all that kind of stuff. I'd be keeping a close eye on that. And then for a surprising one, I would say jellyfish. Okay. It wasn't a million years ago that fishermen were throwing monkfish off the side of a boat back into the sea. I think jellyfish... again, abundant, plenty of very positive properties in that. I think that might just become a little bit more acceptable into the future.
So selling jellyfish at the fish counter or showing up in different ways, Rory?
Well, you know, I let the Asians come up with that. But no, it's certainly something that they're looking at in the East.
They're on the menu in Big Fan Bao on Georgia Street.
So you'll Audrey, be picking them up off the beach in Dolument. Sort of
there you go. They could be high value before you know it.
I'm Robin Stevens. When I actually did have it down, it was when I was going through the questions this morning to refresh myself, it was Koji aging, using Koji to age plant-based, using that kind of umami, back to the umami, yes. Mm. 100% MSG is no longer the dirty word that it used to be. That would be my big one. It's functional health as well, so you're getting that gut health, all of that sort of, that's the direction that everyone's gone, that it shouldn't be that we're having to call out gut health, that it is just naturally functional, and it becomes the norm rather than that they
honing in on the claim.
Yeah,
very good, thank you. Michael?
I think I would probably struggle with a single ingredient, but what I do think is fusion food will continue to grow and become much more the norm. If I look now where, even in Glasgow, you want to go for a Sunday roast, you can go for a Spanish Sunday roast, you know, a South American Sunday roast, a Middle Eastern Sunday roast, things like this are, you know, things like shepherd's pie with keema. It's all these kind of fusion and comfort foods in it. And I think it's the population and the, you know, more people come in, these kind of grow. And I think it'll just become more and more the norm for me, I think. I think just touching on cultured meat, if you'd asked me 5 years ago, I would have maybe said 2030, but I think we're still...
We're a little bit slower.
2030, it's not, I don't think it's going to be. I think nobody's really managing to scale it up properly at an affordable cost. Yeah, you might be able to get it in Asia, I think, at a great expense, but I think we're still a bit away from that, probably just from being in and around that sort of place.
Okay, thank you.
I'm going to steal my one back and say Koji, for all the reasons we've already discussed. And then there was one that's sort of a little bit out of left field. I went on a foraging trip not so long ago, and the guy was quite out and out there guy, and he was making us all eat the stinging it to all seeds, mm-hmm, off the top. And he swears, but that they cleared his mum's arthritis.
Okay.
So if there's any proof in that, then
natural and herbal remedies.
Yeah, that would become a massive thing.
Yeah, and it's in everybody's back field or yard or garden.
Mm, yeah, yeah.
For exactly, times of the year. Yeah, great. Okay, brilliant. Okay, well, look, we'll wrap up just to say thank you to Stephen, to Michael, to Audrey, to Rory and to Derek. Really enjoyed that conversation. Thank you so much for all your fantastic insights.
Thanks for having us.
Brilliant.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Food Matters Live podcast. Before you go, we have some exciting news to share. In 2026, we're hosting two major events. We'll be in London in June, and we're back in Rotterdam in September. Visit foodmatterslive.com to register and join us as we inspire the future of food.